Good morning to you, and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about the people and organizations that make an impact around Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm your host this week, Chris Arnold from 105.3 The Fan. Thank you for joining us on this Sunday morning, and especially in these times, as America deals with a global pandemic and a crisis of humanity. We continue to focus on health and safety, both physically and emotionally. That's right, both. And joining me today is Arthur Fleming of the Dallas chapter of the NAACP and Estella Williams, president of the Fort Worth chapter of the NAACP. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining us this morning. The first thing right off the bat, we're in the middle of a pandemic, economic situation where 40 million people are unemployed, and we have a lot of social unrest right now. In fact, it might be the correct order of things where people can pay attention to what's going on, not only in the streets, not only on their social media, not only on their TV sets, but with each other. Arthur, tell us about what you've seen and heard around the Dallas area as president of the Dallas chapter of the NAACP.
Well, as a recent past president, basically what we know is that what COVID-19 has done, it has exposed America and has shown that there's a lot of inequalities, and because of that, and then you, and as you well know, then the killings start to happen again. Well, they never stopped, but high profile killings started. So now we have this conflagration, and it's global. So I think we're going to have an opportunity to shift the paradigm. I think this is an opportunity for us to put our grievances forward. The Civil War never ended because we weren't at the table. So this is the third Reconstruction. So hopefully we'll be able to end the Civil War.
And, you know, I think the order of events kind of helped out the situation where people actually have time in their personal lives to pay attention to things. Sometimes people are, you know, they're so busy. And they're like, wow, I know things are going on in the world today, but I really don't have time to pay attention to every detail. And I think the pandemic and the fact that a lot of people are at home, they're paying attention right now. So Estella Williams in Fort Worth, can you talk about how the NAACP is being affected right now with those three things happening at once?
Okay, sure. First of all, let me say thank you so much, Chris, to for you taking the time to have us on your program. And then let me just respond to your question. I am a little different in saying that this isn't our first pandemic experience. We have had many pandemics, and we are still experiencing pandemics, such as in the realm of education, equal opportunity. And under that equal opportunity, you definitely put education, opportunities to jobs, opportunities of being able to know that when you are faced with situations such as the incarceration rate, you know, that has been a pandemic. It wasn't called that, but it is a pandemic. When you think in terms of how the rate of incarceration for especially our black men being 2.5 times more likely to be incarcerated than our others, even from the standpoint of our black men being killed by police. You know, those things to me, you see as being a pandemic. I see it as being a pandemic. Black men are more likely to encounter issues with the police regardless of where they live. I don't care if your zip code or your income is that of a higher standard. You're going to, as a black male, you're going to be subjected perhaps to issues with encounters with the police. And so I look at those things as certainly pandemics that we're still in the fold of. And now that we have the health pandemic, certainly that's one when you look at the African-American community and, you know, the statistics, the CDC statistics, those that are local, as to how it is affecting the African-American community. That just adds to the list of pandemics that I feel like exist.
We're talking with Estella Williams, with the Fort Worth Tarrant County chapter of the NAACP, as well as Arthur Fleming with the Dallas chapter of the NAACP. One of the reasons why we reached out to you two is because of the history of the NAACP. NAACP has been around forever. In fact, you guys are the premier civil rights organization in America. You have over, 2,000 adult branches, youth councils, and college chapters in 50 states, all 50 states, five countries around the world, and the District of Columbia. NAACP is actively engaged in increasing African awareness, African American awareness, and the fact that people need to engage in the process. With that being said, the NAACP wants lots of people to get involved. And Arthur, can you talk about what someone who's listening right now can do? They're feeling like all this social unrest is going on right now. What can I do to possibly help?
Well, what the Dallas branch, what we're focused on is, of course, you don't have a November election coming up. So what we're focusing on is to get out the vote effort and be, because that's where it's going to start. And so what we're going to be doing is registering voters, educating them on the mail-in ballots. I don't know if you know it or not, but the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, ruled 5-4 that we're going to be able to use mail-in ballots.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very important, especially for the African American community. So if you don't get in the line, you don't have to deal with the hassle. You just mail your vote in. So we're going to be educating people out there. We're also going to be campaigning on those healthcare issues, access to capital issues, and so forth. So we're going to be educating people again. We're going to educate their vote.
Yeah, education is very important, because once you understand what it's all about, that's how you can figure out how you too can make a difference. Estella, can you talk about how people can get involved with the NAACP?
Most definitely, Chris. That is something that I am so glad that we're doing this, so that it can be heard loud and clear. From the standpoint here in Fort Worth, first of all, let me just say we are a branch that handles, we cover Fort Worth as well as Tarrant County.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike some of the other cities, we do Fort Worth, Tarrant County as well, in knowing that we have an Arlington area. But again, with us, we're advocating, just as was mentioned about the voter education, I would like to say that it's not just an education about the fact of letting people know about the mail-in ballots and all this, but I think it's a step backwards where we need to, first of all, educate the people in knowing that there's no longer a straight ticket ballot, so mm-hmm. that when we've got the first-time voters, they need to know they can't just go in and say, I can vote a straight ticket. So certainly education is critical in knowing what to expect when you get to the poll. So that is critical. And then the fact, too, that knowing what is there for you to be introduced to on the ballot. We're so busy saying, let's get people registered to vote, and then the next step is getting them to the poll to vote. But we want them to be educated. Now, keep in mind, the NAACP is a nonpartisan organization. Here in Fort Worth, you mentioned about the history. We are 85 years old in Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
Our NAACP unit has been around for 85 years old, a little over 85 years. And so we are steady advocating the importance of the vote, but we want persons to know when you get there, then know what to expect when you show up. And therefore, it won't frighten you. It won't cause you to think, well, my gosh, I didn't know this, and just stand there and make a decision based on a gut. Knowledge is power.
That's one my of the favorite. Other by the way, that's my favorite quote, knowledge is power.
In the city, we're really interested in making sure people realize the importance of a decision they make when they get that jury duty statement. How many times, if you go out and take a poll, when you get a summons to appear for jury duty, typically people will say, let me use whatever excuse I can use in order to get out of this. We want people to know, again, educating them to know, if you step away, you're leaving those decisions in the hand of somebody else.
Exactly. And
so
therefore,
we want people to realize, I mean, a stern realization of knowing it may take up some of your time, but you cannot gripe and complain about decisions that somebody else is making if you've been given the opportunity and you didn't take advantage of it. So the very need to answer that call for jury duty, not only answering the call for jury duty, but also volunteering your time to go sit in if it's possible. Now, we know we're faced with COVID-19, but if at all possible, take the time out to sit in on these juries. Your presence can speak volume. And so we've got many things going on, but those are some critical things that we're advocating, that we're wanting to do. We're busy trying to make sure that we get the message out that education is power. You know, we found that so many individuals that we would try to register who would, if they had a prior history, criminal history, first thing they would say is, I can't vote. I can't vote because I've been down, I've been to the university, I've been incarcerated. But providing them the knowledge to know, if you are not on paper, and that's the key, they understand that. If you're not on paper, you have the right that has been restored to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are with as far as he's talking about. There are other things we're doing here in the city. And if you'd like for me to share some of those other things, I can do so.
Oh, we will definitely get into that. But I also wanted Arthur to talk about some of the ways that people can vote and vote early in Dallas. I know a lot of people aren't aware that you can physically in person vote 13 days before the election. Are there opportunities right now that we can prepare and make sure there's enough voting machines in the areas where a lot of the people try to vote, Arthur?
Well, Chris, they've changed the voting system around where now you can go to anywhere in your county.
Excellent.
Vote.
So, you don't have to go into your specific home area district. That's excellent.
Right. So actually, you know, the jury's still out on that as far as like, you know, what effect is that, a good thing or a bad thing? I haven't heard a lot of extra complaints about it, but again, that's going to be a part of our education program. We're going to, dive in all that, but we can tell people whether it's good or whether it's bad. You know, we're going to ask people, you know, just see what they think about it.
Right, because what we don't want to happen is an Atlanta situation where there were long lines, and this is not even a partisan thing. It's just as an American citizen, you have the right to vote, and no one should be waiting in long lines.
I think Atlanta is still using the precinct system.
Oh.
And I think that's why you saw those. I think that's one of the reasons why. You remember she said, I went over to my precinct.
Right.
I took a lady to her precinct. She voted in 7 minutes. It took me 2-3 hours at mine. Okay, so that's precinct. So they probably it would have been harder for them to pull that off, to do that to them, if they could have, because she could have voted where the other lady voted probably. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so but I think they use the precinct system, I think. But then that's part of voter suppression, which is which is another education issue that we're going to be working with people on to get them to understand how that works. And what I want white people to understand is that they're suppressing your vote. Ask them up in Iowa. What I want my white friends to understand is that when it comes to freedom in America, you don't have any more freedom than the lowest black man. That's how much freedom you got. So, you know, we're working with Reverend Barber's Poor People Campaign to try to bring poor whites and blacks together where we can, you know, create a common agenda where we can make some changes that's going to help white folks and black folks in America.
Yes, there's lots of ways that a lot of people can get involved. In fact, Estella, were you as impressed as I was at all the different people who were protesting? Not that they were just protesting, but you had all races, all ages, all parts of American society out there.
Absolutely. You know, Chris, I look at this the rallies and the protests as being a human rights initiative. With being human rights, again, as a human, when you think in terms of peeling back the layer, the last layer is that the blood is red.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is definitely, to me, a time where all people are coming together. My thought goes back to the speech by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King when he talked about, you know, black children and white children and, you know, children of all races coming together. And this is what we're seeing with these marches and with the protests. Now, certainly we are just excited to see our young people because in line with the pandemic that we're experiencing from a health standpoint, we realize that there, you know, CDC has said there are certain age groups, certain levels of conditions of health where you're vulnerable to perhaps the virus. And so therefore, you know, you've got to be mindful of that and you've got to be cautious. And so I'm grateful to see the young people stepping up, stepping out, and taking this on as a matter of saying, we look forward to change. If not now, then when?
Exactly. The NAACP has always been about civil rights. And Arthur, can you talk about how the casual person sitting at home who wants to do something, but they don't know exactly what they could do to help in the societal change that's going on right now, not only in the United States, but you can see it all over the world. In fact, you and I were talking about earlier how impressive and amazing that the world has embraced this.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'll tell you one thing they can do all over Texas for sure. One initiative that I led as president was the African-American Studies curriculum program. We submitted it through resolutions through the state conference. And it basically just, you know, it basically mushroom took off. We did the pilot program this past school year in DISD. This past April, the state voted to make it statewide. So if you want to get involved, I'm asking anybody that's listening to go to your local school board, wherever you're at, and request the African-American Studies program. Now, what this program is going to do in the long run, and again, and if it's in with this movement, we need to remove the part where our kids, after they grow up, mm-hmm. they realize that they've been taught a bunch of lies.
Mm-hmm.
And what this program eventually will wind up doing is, again, relieving them of the, quote, white guilt and so forth and so on, and relieve our kids of the fake shame that they have. So I think that both of them can learn it together, the real history. I think it's going to work out for everybody. So what you can do, again, if you hear me, go to your local school board, request that they implement the African-American Studies program.
Outstanding. And, you know, a really good friend of mine, her name is Cent Marshall. She's the president of the Dallas Mavericks front office. And she's always been about diversity and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple of things she said I want to share with everybody listening on our show here, Better Living. She said, we got to open our minds to process why people are so upset right now and try to envision living with the way things are going on and how they must change. She also mentioned you should open your hearts and show compassion to those who are struggling right now as if their very existence is threatened, because it is. And try to imagine yourself as a black person in America where people are afraid of you, even though they don't know you. Open understanding to those who are often stereotyped as the oppressor because of the ills of a few people who were oppressing others. So you got to understand both sides. You follow what she was saying? Try to embrace what other people are feeling as well as they try to figure things out, what's going on and how people are perceiving them. She also mentioned that we should open our circle of friends and let more people who don't look like us in. In other words, change the relationships that you have by including more people and sharing some of your beliefs and challenging some of theirs. She also mentioned, finally, we should open our eyes, our mouths, and our hands to address the problems of injustice, inequality, and disparity. And if we see something, say something, and do something. Now, that's just sent. And her philosophy is what the NAACP has been about forever. Am I wrong? Right. Am I wrong, right. Estella?
Absolutely correct. She could not have said it better. I definitely am one who agrees with the things that I've heard her share these things as well. And when you really think about it, race, we're getting an opportunity to see more things on, especially KERA, concerning race relations.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about race, talking about a subject that is really sometimes not comfortable. But that's how you grow, and that's how you learn. Being able to, like you said, open up your heart and your mind and, you know, decide that, you know, fear is only fear for that one who wants to maintain it. But again, being able to say, I don't know, but I'm interested in learning what can be done. Have those conversations. You know, one of the things that we're so good to have right now, you know, the Zoom calls. We can't come together as we've done in the past, but being able to just, you know, include the inclusion of others and just let it be known that, hey, we need to talk about this. I truly feel that, you know, we're living, I don't feel like that we're in a melting pot. You know, years ago, they used to say that we're in a melting pot. But I can remember providing a presentation where I said, it's not a melting pot. If you put candles in a pot of various colors, if you've got black in there, that black is going to dominate all of the colors.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a melting pot. But I look at it that we're in a society where every individual, every group has an identity, and there's a reason of importance. You think in terms of making a pot of stew, as simple as making a pot of stew. You're going to have various vegetables that are there. They're not there because you want them to melt down. You're there because of the uniqueness that they bring. The potato has a uniqueness, the carrot. And when you're done with that stew, depending on the time of year it is, you're looking forward to it. But every vegetable in that pot has had a value that could be provided to you. And the color remains. So you cannot get rid of one to be, you know, stamp it out, but it's an inclusion. And so I look at that pot of stew as being able to say that's where we should be in America. There's a uniqueness and an importance of everything that exists in this, in the nation we live in.
Estella, you're not only painting wonderful pictures, you're making me hungry.
Okay, well, you just have to grab something to eat when you're done.
You're exactly right.
That's just, you know, that's the way I look at it. You know, when you're doing that, again, the carrot, the potato, the onion, the stew is the greatest idea of what you're, what I look at as being able to see diversity and inclusion.
And Arthur, I know you have some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, well, what I just want people to do, what we ask folks to do is to, you know, we just, this is an opportunity for us to reimagine America.
Yeah.
We could reimagine it in education and an economic base building for our community. You know, reimagine it in healthcare. You know, this is paradigm shift time. Like I told you, America is changing. The old normal, quote normal, ain't coming back. It's going to be a new normal, and so we need people to advocate for what you feel you want to see in this new normal. And again, I quote that the great poet Jane Brown when he said, I don't want nobody giving me nothing. Just open up the door, and I get it myself.
The great James Brown. Very nice, great very nice. Poet. So that being said, the reason why a lot of people are taken to the streets and the reason why uncomfortable conversations are happening is primarily because people witness police brutality, something that all people have been talking about for years. With the advent of social media and video cameras, and things of that nature, people are able to see with their own eyes. Estella, could you talk about how systemic racism can be changed within the police department and what ways maybe the NAACP can help out?
You know, the fight needs to be a political fight. We're going to have to fight politically, and that is through legislature. That, you know, brings about change from not only just a local standpoint, but throughout. When we think in terms of what we're seeing with the killing, when I think in terms of the cry that our latest Mr. George Floyd, the cry that he had, never in the past history were there people around who recorded such incidences. These things have happened for years and years and years, but yet we're in a new day to where people have cameras on their phones. Seeing that that situation on live, you know, openly viewing, it was one that allowed the nation to be able to see that here is something that a camera, a simple telephone, was able to record. And so it's not as it has been in the years past, where these things happened and they were swept under the rug, or, you know, there was no accountability as to what happened. It would be one person's word over the other. But yet, with the cameras anymore, telephones, it gives air to being able to have this information and have these things, these incidents, as they appear. And so, again, we're fortunate for those persons who are standing up and taking a look at it. I also feel as though, as far as with our law enforcement, we must be able to know that when persons who are in law enforcement are going out to these or handling situations, being able to try and de-escalate a situation without using a legal weapon that they've got, you know, accessible to, trying to de-escalate the situation to the maximum abilities that they have. One of the things that I know and I certainly feel is so important is that we talk about training. You can be ever more trained, but if you are functioning out of fear, that training does not take precedence over the fear. It's just the opposite.
Right.
And so being able to have, I just truly believe that having some method in place of knowing you have the knowledge, but you also can function without, if it means having someone there with long tenure of experience with you, with a heart that is right, then that fear will not escalate to the top of the situation. The main thing of accountability, knowing that if one creates a crime, it doesn't matter if I'm wearing a uniform or wearing a suit, a crime is a crime. And so being held accountability for that crime, regardless of who you are, what your address is, where you work, or whatever, you've committed a crime. And so being held accountable for your actions is going to be the thing that will help us get through this pandemic of criminal activity or crimes that we're seeing, the killings, the things that we've seen on videos, you know, again, of the senseless killings.
Here on Better Living, we're talking with Arthur Fleming of the Dallas chapter of the NAACP, and Estella Williams, president of the Fort Worth Tarrant County chapter of the NAACP. And Arthur, particularly with police brutality, we were talking about some parts of police reform that people can advocate for. You see people having that kind of conversation right now. I heard a professor talk about some ways that the police can do a better job. And it starts with maybe recognizing that the police are not guidance counselors. They're not trained to be doctors or paramedics or school teachers and so forth. With that in mind, maybe when you call 911, there are other options than just the police showing up, especially if it's not a crime involved.
Yeah, those are the issues that's being discussed under the term defund the police.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and based what that means, I actually like the term because it can mean different things to different people. But basically, what it comes down to is they're saying, which is what our community has been saying forever: put the resources at the front end so you don't have to pay on the back end. It's just that simple. You know, more social services. If you look at police budgets in most cities, it's like upside down. I mean, it's like way up.
Right.
Like here in Dallas, it's like over $500 million a year.
So, and some of those funds aren't directed to the right agencies. They're just,
exactly.
Okay, maybe you're using that on vehicles.
And I want to say something for the police. You know, if you're sending them out to social services situations and they got a gun and they've been taught to just shoot people, then that's pretty much what's going to happen. And like I told you, ever since 85, since Reagan changed that law, made it harder for people to get mental health services. Now we're just locking mostly black people up, for those types of service. So basically we need the police to go out and do police stuff. You know, we don't need them going and doing social services stuff. So I think that, mental health services, basically it's got to invest in this nation's infrastructure as far as those type services, of which, they were defunded a long time ago. So we need to refund a lot of stuff that's been defunded.
And speaking of funding and defunding, there's the situation of it's a process, a pipeline, a school to prison pipeline. And mm-hmm. It's about education and how you can stop that part of a system. Estella, can you talk about that pipeline, the school to prison, which is the numbers are outrageous in the black community in particular?
You know, Chris, it goes right back to the statement that I made concerning the pandemic of education. You know, that school to pipeline is one where it says that if a child, by the time they reach third grade, if they're not able to read or if they're not able to function,
mm-hmm.
in the manner that they should, they do the statistics, and those statistics provide them reasons of saying, we need to build another prison. And how sad is it that child, and it's mainly with the male population of the African-American students, when you really think about that, a child being in third grade, not being able to function, you have to stop to realize, has education been equal? There are many things that a child is faced with, certainly. You know, when you go look into the home, what platform has there been laid out for that child to have an opportunity of learning and to gain the educational level that they need? You know, you sometimes find parents being young parents. And so, look at that background. Is this a generational thing? So by the time that child is third grade and certainly not being able to function, being able to read and carry on, then you get to see a child then put into special ed. Because why? That child is perhaps acting out to keep from being looked at as not being knowledgeable. So what do? They provide a mental health class for that child. And that only lasts so long. After a while, you're going to find that child, that same child that's been put in special ed, will no longer feel that this is a place that I want to be. I don't fit where they place me. And eventually, that child is going to drop out of school. And that same child is going to have an effect on you, me, and anyone else that's within the pathway.
Exactly.
And so you can see that path laid out from that school, that pipeline to prison. And it started back when that child was a baby, as a child. And so it's just so harsh to realize that even with this pandemic of health right now, the schools have been closed for how many weeks? That equated to months. And they're saying you need to teach your child at home, but not everybody's able to do that. So we're going to have another pandemic of children who have been home, and what did they have access to? Not one who knew how to teach them, not one who knew how to help them learn and to grow. But you're going to be confronted with children who had access to telephone, cell phones, electronic equipment, you know, if I'm having an issue with my cell phone, I can go to a kid and say, can you help me with this? And they can.
Right.
So we're going to have a pandemic again related to the worst effect of children not being able to receive even that educational piece they were receiving, but even less than that. Because why? There's no one there who can teach them. I give you an example of this by saying my daughter is an educator, and certainly when this thing came about, she developed a schedule for my six-year-old granddaughter. Just so happened the second week that it took place, she brought the schedule because she is the administrator at the school where she is. And she brought the schedule along with the grandchild. And I thought, we've got to do all this.
Yeah.
And when it came time for the math, I got a book out and I said, oh, well, let's do some math out of this book. And she said, she calls me sweetie. She said, no, sweetie, I'm doing some fractions at 6 years old.
Wow.
And that's only because there is someone in the household who has the knowledge to provide some education outside of the school that the child is attending. But that's not the case with all of them. So therefore, we're going to have another pandemic.
I think you're exactly
right. And
then
that pandemic is going to, again, be accelerating the fact of the school to pipeline into prison.
I think you're exactly right. And, Arthur, I think I was talking with Dr. Michael Hinojosa, who's the superintendent of the Dallas Independent School District, and he was talking about this very same subject about a lot of kids don't have access to Wi-Fi, and therefore they couldn't get their proper education through the portals like a lot of kids.
Yeah, and that goes to that whole broadband issue. Right.
Yes.
You know, and you know, so they're trying to pass some laws that will, you know, make that happen. But, you know, but that's why we can't get it in rural areas and places and so forth and so on.
Now,
so
you mentioned, I'm glad you said rural, because it's not just urban. It is rural. It's literally everywhere that kids don't have access to what most kids have. And just like Estella was saying, that's going to be the second wave of the pandemic, the lack of education amongst the kids who didn't have the same access as other kids.
And as far as DISD, you know, we got another issue, you know, about, you know, we talk about the role of police in our schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we really want, you know, I mean, police up in a school like that walking around with guns, or do we want them on the perimeters?
You know, if I might add something to that, Chris, concerning the role of the police, I saw that interview on TV. And, you know, years ago as kids, when I was a child, we always saw the police as our friend. And I think that when I look at the fact of the role of the police on the school campus, that's an opportunity to try to gain that kind of activity back into place. I have a member, a very close family friend member, who actually is one of those who's on the school campus.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing of it is, he has developed such a bond with the students at a middle school level that any time that there's an issue or complaint or concern, they're right there at his feet. And so I could see that. I see that as a positive thing, because they're not there to squash out a crime or a criminal activity, but they're there as a person to advocate, to be a mentor to them, unlike what they might would experience at home.
When you make
a phone call for police to come to the home, there's a disturbance that's going. And sometimes these children, I do feel that when I look at the situation that I'm familiar with, they are looking at that officer as one that, number one, they can go to and talk to and to, you know, depending on the individual, if your heart is right and your mind is in order, then that police officer is not there in the line of duty as a law enforcement officer only, but also there to provide support, to be there to let them know that, hey, I'm here to help you, to hear, to listen to you, and to be there taking you home if you got to get a ride home or something.
And you know what? I think you're right on that, because that's how you solve some of the issues. If there's some sort of trust, it's got to be built eventually. And if those...
Let me speak as an educator, because I'm in the building, so I know about, basically what I'm talking about is, and I'm saying have discussion, because when you in school cultures, and that's what we're talking about, a school culture, you know, it's what kind of culture do you want? Do you want, and again, it's up to the leadership, what type of culture you're building. Are you building a police heavy culture? Are you? And I say, and I understand the anecdotal relationships she's talking about. Yeah, people have those. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, the police are bad that's in the schools. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that. What's their role as far as creating the atmosphere? You know, and that type of thing. So I'm just saying that's what we have to really look at. You know, what is their role? You know, mainly. Now, the schools I've been in, again, you know, they walk around with the gun, folks see him walk around with the gun, is that what you want? And so that's what I'm saying about that.
Yeah.
It goes back to the mindset of the officers. Are they feeling like they're law and order? Or are they feeling like they're there to serve and protect? The question is if they have some training, if they have a presence in that neighborhood over time and not looking out of a squad car and perhaps maybe on a bicycle, if they're approachable, if you know this is, for example, Officer Leroy Quigg. Oh, I know Quigg. Quigg is cool. I can talk to him, as opposed to who's that guy that just showed up and he got a gun and can't nobody talk to him. He's wearing sunglasses every day. That's what you got to break down. You got to break down, and that's why you should have some of those fundings go towards that part of the police officer's education.
Well, that nuance, relationship might be hard to kind of get to when your school is kind of toe up from the flow up.
Exactly.
You know, which is another thing we're working on over here in Dallas, getting new schools, trying to get some new schools built. And again, I'm just talking about the overall atmosphere.
Sure.
And it goes back to, you know, what kind of school you're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Whether you drink the red water or not.
You can't afford to... You know, it's not a cookie cutter. It's not a one-size-fits-all.
Right. Right.
You know, I truly feel like, again, I'd like to invite you over here to visit some of the schools where we have those school initiative officers, because, it has created such an attitude with the children, like I said before, because of the heart and the mind and the attitude of that officer, and that's where it comes in at. It's not one, if you've got one walking around with his hand on his hip and, he's not doing the thing to bridge the gap between what is going on and what is not. It makes a difference. But I even advocate to the fact, I had this one person say to me that he felt, who is an officer, he felt like any newly hired officer, should be told to come to work at a school as an initiative officer, or working with that school initiative officer, because the bottom line, and I totally agree with it, because if that person cannot communicate and know how to adjust actions and be able to function in dealing with children, how in the heck are you going to deal with adults?
Go ahead, Arthur.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that the relationship, again, I don't own a gun, but if I had one, I probably have a different attitude. Well, just like if I'm in school and I got police walking around, I got a little bit of different attitude. A lot of instances that happen, wind up being legal sometime that probably maybe ought not have been legal. I mean, may not have been turned into that, because of that. So I'm just saying we need to reimagine, that whole thing, the way the atmosphere of the school. What's the attitude of the police in the school? I've been in a school where, had some good police, I've been, you know, some schools where, you know, I kind of would, you know, had some doubts about, you know, hey, you know, that cat there or not, you know, she'll not be in those schools.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she's going to have that too. So I'm just saying, you know, I'm saying, let's just reimagine, and now's the time for us to reimagine all of that. So, and so we're going to have an opportunity too.
A good point. And speaking of reimagining, there's a lot of people who are listening. They're wondering, what can they do to help? And they may not be the kind of person that, you know, is young and feel like, I want to get out this energy and go protest.
Right.
And they might want to do something with the NAACP because they trust the history of the institution of the NAACP. And by the way, let me throw this in real quick. NAACP stands for National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. I've always thought, and it's been named that for, you know,
forever.
I've always thought, you know, over time, it's like maybe the name might change because colored people is not what people call themselves anymore, even from the 60s on. And I was always thinking that maybe in the last few years, because it's opened up to so many different people, maybe it should be called the NAACP, People of Color.
Let me give you just a little history right quick.
Okay.
Just a little history. Okay, now when the NAACP people started in Springfield, Missouri, Mary White, a white Jewish lady,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, a white Jewish lady, and you know, W.E. Du Bois, a whole bunch of other folks, they got together and created. So the NAACP has been multicultural from the beginning. So
sure.
And most folks say, you know, we went through this thing about, you know, well, why don't you change the name? But and then folks say, well, you know, actually everybody's colored. You know, before folks came to America, there was no such thing as race, you know, white and black. So, you know, actually, you know, and again, like I say, you know, the name has its own power because it has a history that people need to remember.
And respect.
When we were colored.
Mm-hmm.
And not only people remembered when we were colored, when you look at a box of crayons, and I'm not one to say I'm teaching a class, but if you look in the box of crayons, every color in that box has a unique reason for being there. A painter having a palette will be using many colors for whatever that painting is, and it brings about a uniqueness or whatever. But when we think in terms of the NAACP, the name itself, it encompasses everyone, because that's the way it started in 1909. And so I want to just say, as an organization, we do here in Fort Worth, we get calls from persons and saying, but I'm Mexican, or I'm Hispanic, or I'm, you know, white. It encompasses you. We have a mission. And if you are willing to join forces with our organization to accomplish the mission and the vision that's set before us, that's the key factor right there. It's not about the fact that because you might be one race or color, but it's a matter that you're interested in trying to help us achieve the mission of the organization. What can one do? We have, as an organization, we have many committees. We have initiatives from health, education, law enforcement, criminal justice. I mean, it's just a whole organization that consists of various committees. What I advocate to people when they call, and there are those who have been calling since this situation has been going on with Mr. Floyd, and I say to them, when they say, what can we do? First of all, if you believe in our cause, join us, because membership is power. Do that first. There's an opportunity to become a member, because if you believe, you would want to be a part of us. Once you become a member, take the time out to see it, to determine where can you provide some talent to help us to try and achieve our mission or goals. We talk about political action. We talk about voter initiatives. We talk about health. We talk about prison issues. There is all shoes aren't the same size. So I say to individuals, come in and let's, the shoe size that you wear, perhaps we have some that are already sitting at the table. And we welcome you to bring your talent and your gift or whatever it is that you can do, because no one person has the magic answer. It takes all of us coming together, and it doesn't take us because of our color, but it takes that because of the mission and those things that we're trying to achieve. We don't want to look back years later or years ahead, let me say that, and we're fighting the same fight. This is a new day. We see that the players are different. And so, again, we expect some differences. So what can you do? Join us.
And,
join us.
And
Chris,
Arthur, Chris, go ahead, Arthur.
I would like to get a group of good white people that I could work with and show them how to talk to white people.
I know what you're saying. You want them to talk amongst themselves to see how they can look within themselves and help each other be a part of what's going on right now.
Correct.
In this, at the same time, just like what Estella was saying, from your perspective, can you talk about how if anybody wanted to join the NAACP, can they do that online? Are there some locations in Dallas? Is there a phone number? Tell us your part first, and then Estella, you can tell us the Tarrant County, Fort Worth chapter part.
Okay.
Well, first Arthur.
You said Arthur first?
Yes.
Okay.
If anybody want to join NAACP Dallas, our unit number is 6169. And the membership is $30 a year. And we also have life memberships that people can also purchase. So that's pretty much it. Now, if you want to join online, you can go to the national web page, NAACP.org, and you can join there. If you want some branch information about joining, about having a membership sent to you, or having somebody come pick it up, you can call 469-349-9525. That's 469-349-9525, and that speaks to Brian. That's our unit secretary, and so he can get you where you need to go.
And Estella?
Okay. Now it's my time. I've got it even greater news. We look forward to persons contacting our office. We have an office located at 1063 Evans Avenue, but we would say to each individual to call our office number, which is 817-332-8919, 817-332-8919. That phone is answered pretty much every day. We have to remember to shut it off after a certain hour because it will ring at 2 in the morning just as if it was 2 in the evening. Typically what has occurred, if people Googled NAACP, they find our number comes up. So we are a very, very busy unit. We also have our own site where persons can go online at F as in Frank, T as in Texas, W as in work, .NAACP.I as in Indian, N as in Nancy, F as in Frank, O as in Oscar, @gmail.com. At that particular site, you are able to lodge a complaint if you have one, get information as to what we're doing, as well as join the organization, which would be our branch. So it's there. Keep in mind, our phone number again, 817-332-8919, or else just put in Fort Worth NAACP. You will be able to find out about us. As Arthur mentioned about the membership, it's the same here. $750 membership is a lifetime membership payable and $75 a year installment for 10 years. And if you believe in it, you'll want to be in it as a part of a lifetime. Be committed to it. We have our meetings every third Tuesday of the month. Right now we're doing Zoom meetings. Before that, it was located at the YMCA here in town. Every third Tuesday at 6 p.m. If you go on the site that I gave you, there will be information that's there that will provide you with the knowledge or the information you need in order to join in on our meeting every third Tuesday of the month.
You guys have been a wealth of information on joining. And I want to mention this too. And Arthur, I want you to go ahead and elaborate as well, but I'm going to start with Arthur. You mentioned the individual. Is there any corporate type partnerships or memberships or even donations or sponsorships that they can work with the NAACP? Arthur, go right ahead.
Yeah, I've got to give our website, NAACP.com.
Yes.
Now, as far as corporate memberships, yeah, we do have corporate memberships. I believe it's gold, silver, and bronze, whatever it is. But base, I think, is like $2,500, $1,500, and $1,000, I believe, for those types of memberships.
And I know a lot of people have been reaching out to you guys, both of you, in the last couple of weeks, especially because of what's going on in America as we deal with a global pandemic and a crisis of humanity.
Right. Yeah, we've been getting quite a few calls. Folks want to contribute funds and so forth. And we appreciate that because we have a lot of issues that we're going to be dealing with. And again, back to, you know, for the folks that say, well, what can I do? Okay, you can do that. Okay, but what else you can do is you can support us over here in Dallas on, again, like I said, the African American Initiative. I'll tell you what to do with that. Make sure you go and talk to your school board person. Six Flags over Texas. I don't know if y'all know it or not, but NAACP Dallas, we had them take down the Confederate flag out of Six Flags.
Mm-hmm.
Now they five flags over Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Lee statue, you know, that's still going on. We're in the courts right now. They're going to be deciding, the Texas Supreme Court going to be deciding case about us completing, getting those statues down. DIC 1882, that was a privatization program. We're still, again, you know, we're still keeping our eye open. We're still fighting to make sure that our schools aren't privatized. So we're going to need your help on that. New schools, we're going to need your help on supporting us and making sure that we get new schools in our communities, because the schools we have are 50, 60, 70 years old. So, you know, with lead pipes.
Estella,
so, you know, yes.
I'm going to give you the final word.
All right, sir. What can one do? Again, if coming in, looking in at the site that I gave, certainly it's an opportunity to provide sponsoring information or even calling our office. We do receive sponsorships. We are not a 501c3. We are a 501c4, but our national office is a c3. However, if in the event one wants to make donations, certainly we have the opportunity to receive those. We have an educational unit within our branch where we will be at the meeting on next week. We'll be introducing, we provide 3 scholarships annually, and we have an initiative to where we have a joint scholarship with NAACP Fort Worth and TCU, Texas Christian University, where it is a full 4-year tuition, fees, and housing that is awarded to a student. And so we have an opportunity to provide folks to give sponsorships for educational scholarships. And so there is all, you know, anyways, contact us through that site. You can ask questions, provide information, or receive that you need either through the site or as well as the phone.
Once again, I cannot thank both of you enough for joining us, especially during these times and especially during a pandemic. Arthur Fleming with the Dallas chapter of the NAACP and Estella Williams, president of the Fort Worth Tarrant County chapter of the NAACP, we remind everybody, once again, how can you do things and make things better today? Open our minds, open our hearts, open our understanding to others, open our circle of friends, and open our eyes, mouths, and hands to address the problems of injustice, inequality, and disparity. If you see something, say something, do something, and remember, you can always trust and turn to the NAACP.
Thank you so much, Chris. This has been an opportunity that has been just so conducive to what we're wanting and needing to do as an organization. Thanks again. We couldn't have done it without you.
Thank you, and thank you too, Arthur.
Thank you, Brother Man. I so appreciate you, and keep up the good work.
I'm Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Tune in next week as we focus on other organizations doing great things in our community, right here on Better Living.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.